You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Dagger!
Oh, Wizards win it!
Arenas hits the shot at the buzzer!
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standa here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, coming to you a day after the Wizards take Game 1 at home over the Atlanta Hawks. I talked about that one with Todd Dybas, per usual, and you should find that one on iTunes. Those of you who did listen to that first game heard my dilemma with the unwanted kidney stone. I am still on kidney stone watch. This has not been the most fun 24 hours of my life, but we're getting through, and I was able to get a podcast in the books today with Brad Rowland. He does the Locked On Hawks podcast, NBA writer of some renown in the Atlanta area. So he and I just chatted, went through both. It was basically a joint podcast. Wasn't really hosted by either of us, I guess. We just both kind of talked, asked questions just talked about teams from both sides of that. So good conversation. I think you guys will enjoy it. Get the perspective of the Hawks. It's always, no matter how much we all think we know what we're talking about, I recognize this dealing with the Wizards. People who only see the Wizards once in a while may think they know what's up. Maybe sometimes they're even right, but they don't always know all the full context, and it's good to get that from both sides, and I think that's what we've just accomplished that in this podcast. So listen up for that here in just a quick second. Before we get into that, and also just thank everybody who reached out to me about to get the kidney stone. Kind of embarrassed in hindsight telling the world, but hey, it is what it is. I just didn't want you all to think I'd flaked on you after game one, that I couldn't handle the playoffs and didn't get up a podcast promptly. Anyway, as always, you can find all of our podcasts on iTunes, Audioboom, or anywhere you do your podcasting. You can hit us up on Twitter at Ben Standig or at Locked On Wizards. Game 2 Wednesday from Verizon Center. Hopefully I'll be there. That'll be a lot of fun. It's also in the podcast here, talked a little bit about some updates from Wizards practice today. So check that out as well. All right, so here we go. My interview with Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks podcast. Back tomorrow with more one way or the other. So here we go. Wizard Talks game one recap, game two preview.
I am Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks, and joining me for this crossover episode is Ben Standig from Locked On Wizards. What's up, Ben?
Brad, hey, glad we got to do this. Bummed we couldn't do it before game one, but always a good time to do NBA playoff podcast.
For sure. Better for you than me, I would say, based on the way game one went. But I don't know. It was sort of an interesting game. I think the Hawks didn't play terribly. And, you know, on the surface, you see a 7-point loss as an underdog on the road, and things could be worse. But I guess the easiest way to get into this is, like, what did you see from the Wizards that was encouraging? We'll start positive. What did you see from Washington that was encouraging this game versus what sort of versus that baseline that you expected coming into the series?
Well, first I should have said it's always a good time to do a MMA podcast. I think that's the appropriate from my end. What did I see that was encouraging for the Wizards? I mean, you know, I guess at the end of the day, at sort of like a bigger picture level, you know, the Wizards didn't make the playoffs last year. The two previous times that they did it and won a first round series, they came in as the underdog both times, and sort of the one, I guess, lingering concern I had, you know, neither team had played well really since, you know, after the All-Star break, but this was going to be the first time the Wizards were going to be entering the playoffs as the favorite, and a lot of people, Charles Barkley and others, are talking about them getting the Eastern Conference Finals. So I was sort of curious to see how they would react to that status, and, you know, obviously they came out with the win. It was sort of a game of runs. The Wizards go up about 11 early, then the Hawks go up 8, and then the Wizards go up, you know, at 15 or so, and, you know, obviously it got a little bit tight at the end, but they held on. So I guess just at a base level, the fact that they, for the opener, seemed to get focused, get, you know, we're in the good frame of mind Obviously, John Wall is a beast. There's definitely some concerns I have, which I'm sure we'll get into, but just their mindset for game one. I mean, we saw, obviously, the East. Boston lost. Toronto lost. Cleveland got taken to the end. So the Wizards were more or less the only team that, I won't say it was an easy win by any stretch, but, you know, largely had it under control in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, easy is an interesting word that'll get you in trouble. I think I might have said that on my recap podcast, to just kind of say that, you know, for as close as the margin ended up being at seven, it didn't feel like a 7-point game to me. Even when the Hawks were up at the half, it didn't feel like the Hawks were in control of the game by any means, at least in my view. And I thought, you know, the third quarter was probably the most indicative quarter. And that is, you know, obviously a situation where Washington led by 10 points. I think it was 38-28 in that third quarter. So I don't know. It's rough to say that Washington sort of cruised to victory, but I also thought they actually kind of did to a degree, as much as you can in a 7-point victory. But I don't know. I guess on the flip side, is there anything that worried you about obviously in a win? There's only so many things that can worry you in a seven point, you know, pseudo comfortable win. But is there one thing that jumped off to you as sort of a worry point for the Wizards moving forward as much as you can?
Well, I mean, I guess probably two things. One, injuries. Jason Smith obviously got hurt at the end of the third quarter, didn't return. He didn't practice today. He said after the game it was a bruised knee. The reason for concern there, not only has he been an effective player for them, especially as like a stretch five type, but without Jan Mahimi, who's not expected to play in game two, they are incredibly thin already with big men up front. If you take Jason Smith out of the equation or say he's limited, I mean, really now you're looking at Marcin Gortat, Markieff Morris, and their next big man would be rookie Daniel Oshefu, who basically didn't play this year. So if Jason Smith is out, you know, I know Atlanta's interior game is not necessarily a massive strength per se, but obviously Dwight Howard is, you know, he got 14 rebounds. He could, he's a four. So for me, one of the big keys in the series was Marcin Gortat's foul trouble, especially without Mahimi. He was okay this game and had a pretty good game himself with a double-double. But, you know, when he's not on the court, they really are lacking in size, especially if Smith is out. Also worth noting, Kelly Oubre did not practice today with some sort of a knee issue, but he seemed to say it was no big deal and he should be okay for tomorrow.
Just one day after Kelly Oubre said that Markieff Morris was better than Paul Millsap, I saw somewhere. I forget who said that, but yeah. Was that a quote that was real? I think it was.
I didn't hear him say it, but I saw people say it. Let's just say Kelly Oubre is a very, 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 very confident young man. So even though he wasn't talking about himself, I wouldn't be surprised to hear him say that. And look, obviously Paul Millsap's the all-star. Markieff Morris is not. Scott Brooks, I know, among others, has praised Millsap's just great consistency. But this year when they've played, and Morris has been equal to him at least, and arguably been better in some spots. And I think that's why the Wizards will win the series if they do. If Millsap's not the best player for Atlanta, I don't think the Wizards are going to lose the series.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I said this, I think, after the fact as well. But if Markieff Morris plays even with Paul Millsap or better, the Hawks are not going to win that game, most likely. And you could argue more that Morris even played better than Millsap did in game one. So that's a bar that the Hawks are going to have a big time struggle trying to clear if Paul is not easily, as you're saying, the best player on the court for the Hawks. And honestly, I came in kind of thinking that Paul had to be the best player in the series. I think John Wall is a better player than Paul Millsap. But for the Hawks to win as the underdog, I would expect Paul to have to be pretty great because they're trying to overcome with some circumstances in which, you know, Washington's a better team that also has home court advantage. So I don't know. Paul was okay in the opener, but he definitely needs to be better. On the Smith thing, I actually think if the Wizards were without Smith, it wouldn't kill them necessarily because, as you mentioned, the Hawks are not this interior focused team. And if you sort of mirror Gortat with Howard, if you're the Wizards, you probably can get away with, you know, Morris, or I mean, I guess even playing smaller than that necessarily, I guess, or if you wanted to try out Chefu for a small stretch. But there are worse teams in the world to be going with only one center against.
No, I'm with you, but like, you know, like when you guys went small late in first quarter into the second, which is when you made your run, I've always been a big Ilyasova fan. And with Ilyasova and Muscala, right, they're not guys who are going to kill you on the interior per se, but at the same point, I mean, the Wizards are, they just don't really have, like, their backup power forward is basically Jason Smith, who at the moment is having to play backup center. And other than that, they basically have to go like super small with some sort of Kelly Oubre, Otto Porter, or Bojan Bogdanovic at the four. So, you know, I'm saying even losing Smith, Yeah, it's not the biggest deal, but now you have, you know, a small forward guarding Muscala or Ilyasova, so that would be my only thing there. But yeah, I mean, one good thing in the Wizards' favor, even if Smith didn't play, because of the two-day break in between games, if Markieff Morris, in theory, has to go 40 minutes, I guess he could, especially because with 2 days on after game two as well. So there is that to consider. He did play a lot of minutes this game, but, you know, I always heard of you, if you're playing, if you're trying to count on somebody playing above 36, 37 minutes, I mean, that's sort of, you know, going outside the norm for almost any of these guys.
For sure. I think that's actually one point of concern that I've had with the Hawks is not playing their guys enough. That's something Mike Budenholzer has kind of been hesitant to do during his entire stretch with the Hawks, even when they were playing at the 60-win level, when they were a legitimate contender, which is what they are this year. But even in this game, nobody played more than 36 minutes, and that was Dennis Schroeder. Paul Millsap only played 34 minutes. And again, it was pretty close contested. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but I think benches are pretty – I mean, they still matter, obviously, in the playoffs, but they are minimized to a degree. Just because starters are playing so many more minutes. And I think all things equal, Washington starters are just so much better than Atlanta's, that that's probably going to be in the end kind of what determines the series. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Let me ask you a question, but since we're talking about the front court and all, let me ask you about Dwight Howard. I mean, when you look at the numbers over the course of the season, you know, what is like top five or so in reboundings, I think tied third in offensive rebounds. You know, you just look at Dwight Howard on the court and you're still, you know, I've always been, you know, who isn't, but in awe of his just the physical specimen that he is. But that said, and even though he did have the 14 rebounds in the opener, I don't know, I never really thought to myself, boy, Dwight Howard is on the court. And I know we're a few years beyond when he took Orlando to the finals and all that, but like it was a worry for me because the teams that have killed the Wizards this year have been the Miami Heat and the Utah Jazz, two teams with those interior big men who can get after you on the boards, block shots and all that. And I know Dwight's not a big shot blocker anymore, but you know, if he's on his game, if he's doing, you know, the you know, those plays where you're afraid to go in the lane, I think the Wizards could have some problem. But I didn't see that in game one outside of some of the rebounding. Where and then he didn't even play tons of minutes. So I guess where are things with Dwight Howard at this point? Is what we saw what we're gonna get from him, or is there another gear that he's got that just wasn't necessary there on in game one?
It's sort of up for debate, I would say. You know, the rebounding has been easily Dwight's biggest contribution this season. The Hawks have gone from, you know, basically being the worst rebounding team in the league last year to somewhere being in the middle of the pack this year. Still not a great rebounding team by any stretch, but most of that is Howard just being an extremely good rebounder. That's his best asset at this point. And he's still a pretty good rim protector. We saw that a couple times in game one where he had some verticality plays and was it a turn at the rim, but he doesn't move in the same way that he used to. And even, you know, with him on the court this year, the Hawks have been very good defensively, but offensively, they've been really, really bad throughout the season with or without him, to be honest, but even worse with him on the court. And that kind of makes it difficult to play him at times, especially down the stretch if the Hawks are trailing or in a close game because, A, you know, he can get fouled and that's you don't want a situation to happen with him at the line. But just in general, his offensive ability and the way that the Hawks fail to space the floor and their ball movement sort of evaporates with him on the court. So there are pros and cons, as you might imagine. I've been talking about Dwight all season long because he's a guy who's very controversial locally. I didn't love the move when they did it. I think he individually has played about as good as I possibly could have thought he would play this year at his age, coming off of what he was doing in Houston before. But with that said, there's an argument that I could pretty easily make that the Hawks are better off, at least for the most part in the series, when he doesn't play, especially offensively. And with the way they defended in game one, with or without Dwight, I think they pretty much are going to have to almost outscore Washington. And that's not exactly a situation that's conducive to seeing a ton of Dwight. Obviously, he's going to play in the series. I'm not sure he's going to play more than he did in game one, which I think surprised a lot of people, especially nationally, that he played 29 minutes. And the numbers don't look awful, except for his plus minus, in which he, you know, the Hawks got killed with him on the court. But I don't know. Dwight's an interesting situation. I think it's kind of a split camp between the people that think he shouldn't play almost at all, or the people that think the Hawks should run even more of their offense through him. And I technically probably veer toward the him not playing as much necessarily. I know it's not realistic that he won't play at all in this series, but I think looking and sort of managing what he does and he definitely should not play at any point when Gortat's not on the floor. That I will say. I think that's the one time where you have, you know, you almost have to have him on the court is when Gortat's playing. But when he's not, I would expect or at least hope that Budenholzer would get Dwight off the court in a hurry in that situation.
And that's what has made me really question how can the Wizards. I don't want to say how can they lose the series because it's 4-5, and I'm not that arrogant about the Wizards. But again, like I agree with you. If Millsap's not the best player in the series, and obviously Wall and Beal have a big edge in the backcourt, generally speaking, then it's like, well, if Dwight Howard isn't killing Gortat, or at least not becoming just a real presence, then it's just like, well, where's the other matchup? Where are they gonna get it done? So yeah, so it's interesting. And you're right, when the Hawks went small, that against the Wizards bench, which has been a big, you know, for the most part, have been a big issue for the Wizards all year, especially now that Mahimi's out again. The Hawks definitely have an edge on the bench, and that was a scarier look, especially in that first half, when the Wizards in the start in the fourth quarter, instead of going straight bench, you know, matching straight bench against bench, they kept Morris and Beal in the game, and I think that allowed them to not only that allowed them to increase the lead, you know, rather than having it go the other way. So if the Wizards keep some starters out there on the court with their second unit, which I think they need to, and Dwight Howard is not Dwight Howard in all caps, then yeah, it just seems like a tough ask for Atlanta, but we will see. I've been fooled before.
Yeah, for sure. I was actually going to ask you about sort of the notion that Washington's this slam dunk favorite in the series, and I kind of thought they were, but I also noted before the series that, you know, I don't know, maybe you remember something else that I don't, but I could not remember the last time there was a 4-5 series in the NBA in which absolutely no one picked the 5 seed. I mean, obviously, normally the 4 seed's better than the 5 seed, and they have home court, so I get it, but I couldn't find a single, you know, writer, someone who does this for a living on the internet that picked the Hawks in the series. It didn't surprise me because I didn't pick the Hawks either, but, I mean, I couldn't find anybody that sort of blew me away because I couldn't remember a situation where, at least in a 4-5 series, that we saw just absolutely no one on the other side.
You know, when the Wizards, the two times that they were in the playoffs before with this same group, they played the Bulls in the first round, and then they played Toronto in the first round. And in my head, I really do feel like the only people that were picking the Wizards were sort of the local writers. Nobody gave them much of a chance against the Bulls, and they won that one 4-1. Toronto was definitely a favorite. Toronto had home court advantage, and the Wizards swept them. I guess the thing that's weird about this one is, you know, the Wizards, it didn't just feel like they were playing so-so since the All-Star break. I mean, the record said as much. They were basically a 500 team. Since March 13th, they were 8-9, which is not exactly impressive, and yet that's better than Atlanta. If Atlanta doesn't win those four, Atlanta went 6-10 since March 13th, and they won, but 4 in a row late. So I guess it's just, you know, it's pretty weird to have two teams combine for a 14-19 record for the month before the playoffs start. But the Wizards, because they had just built up so much more, they were so much more impressive earlier on. And, you know, of course, everybody remembers the game against Cleveland that they lost, but then they also dismantled Cleveland in the head-to-head finale, and I think those results, you know, had everybody thinking, hey, the Wizards can get this done, whereas with the Hawks, it was, I know they just had the two games against Cleveland, but it feels like everybody was blaming that more on Cleveland than they were crediting the Hawks, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I'm with that. I picked the Wizards in 6 before the series, and I'm obviously a local guy here in Atlanta. And I think it was hilarious to the point where you couldn't even find a local guy that's picking Atlanta, even the biggest of homers. I mean, obviously there were some fans on Twitter that would want to pick the Hawks, but aside from that, it was pretty funny to see the dichotomy. And now I actually saw today that 538 has the Wizards at like 86% to win the series, which is a staggering amount after one game in a 4-5 series. Again, same sort of thing. I can't fathom it. But in the same breath, I'm not sure what the path is for the Hawks to win the series, aside from maybe get a break or two to watch. Doesn't play well, but if Washington plays maybe even a B game, something like that, I can't imagine Washington losing, you know, 4 out of the next 6 games. Am I crazy here, or are you as confident as I am not confident?
Well, I mean, like I said, it seems like it's all good for the Wizards. That said, I'll point to a couple things. One, that first half, especially from like middle of the first quarter on, the Wizards' offense looked pretty rough. They were struggling, and even though they'd won 3 out of 4 against Atlanta this year, some of those games, especially the last one, I didn't view it like, oh boy, the Wizards are killing the Hawks. I mean, you know, Atlanta's defense is obviously very good this year, and you know, you could see even at the beginning of this game, in half court sets, they were going to let John Wall take that mid range jumper and just try to keep him away from the basket as much as they could. And what teams have been doing is they've been taking away those 3-point shooters for those drives and kicks. So Otto Porter, who finished 4th in the NBA in 3-point shooting this year, but he really tailed off after the All-Star break because teams were just not giving him the open look anymore. So it felt like Atlanta was doing a pretty good job, but in the second half, just John Wall just imposed himself over on the game and just was running, you know, past everybody. That happens. I mean, he does this a lot, so it's not like it can't happen again. But, you know, if that first half-court defense from Atlanta, I thought was pretty impressive. If that happens again and they can, you know, keep Wall from being, you know, Usain Bolt with the basketball, that's helpful. And then the other thing is the Wizards' three-point defense, they ranked 29th in the league after the All-Star break. And, you know, Tim Hardaway went 0 for 6. I mean, is that going to happen again? I mean, if he goes, you know, 2 for 6 even, you know, what does that do for the game? So, I just think I didn't think the Wizards played that great. I just think Atlanta was just, that, you know, equally as meh, but a little bit worse than meh.
Yeah.
That was
my concern. It was like, I didn't think Washington played that well. And yet it thought that, at least it felt to me that they were in control the great majority of the way. So that's a little bit worrisome. But your point about three-point shooting is a good one. The Hawks are not a good shooting team by any stretch of the imagination. But your point about Hardaway Jr. is a good one. And, you know, I think the bench was a combined 2 for 9 from three as well. So if you throw those two together, you have a 2 for 15 out of those, you know, six guys. And that's a little bit worrisome because they're probably going to shoot better than that moving forward. But the Hawks are not exactly a team that's built to take advantage of a team that doesn't defend a three-point line well, because they really don't have many shooters. They have some guys who can shoot threes, obviously Hardaway Jr., Ilyasova, Bazemore, guys like that who are capable of it, but nobody that's a knockdown threat that's really going to put a lot of fear in the hearts of the opposition defensively. So that's on the bright side there. And look, and the other thing that we haven't mentioned is the Hawks getting to the line 39 times. I'm sure your timeline was probably filled with angry Wizards fans about the officiating, especially in the first half. The Hawks are not going to get to the free throw line 39 times in many games, and if they do, it's probably going to be a lot of Dwight Howard taking, you know, 18 free throws, and that's something you probably don't want to happen. So that outlier in the positive way for the Hawks is a little bit worrisome, because they took advantage of them and they made 32 of 39. That's really good, and they still weren't able to. I mean, their offense was in general, on a point per possession basis, was pretty decent here, but not good enough to get the victory.
You know, the interesting thing about the fouls, yes, obviously it was a big discrepancy, and you know, they had 14 free throws in the first quarter, which I looked, I think that was more than Atlanta had in 7 different games this year.
I believe it.
but the thing to keep an eye on with that is the Wizards over the last, say, month or two of the season, with John Wall leading the way here in a bad way, were particularly whiny and cranky when it came to the refs and fouls. I mean, John Wall ended up with, like, 15 technicals. And as he goes, so go the Wizards in almost every way. And, he was okay, it felt like, with the refs. But I saw some chirping out there. Bradley Beal a couple times, like, he would even, like, make a play, but then wouldn't get a foul call and would sort of, you could see him gesturing towards the refs. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. If the fouls keep piling up again on the Wizards, how do they handle it? They weren't so great with that later in the regular season, and if it's another, what was it, 39-17, so, you know, somewhere even veering in that kind of discrepancy, I'll be curious to see if the Wizards can sort of maintain enough poise in that sense. A question for you though, speaking of like sort of the rotation and who and this and that, Cephalosha doesn't play. I understood why Bazemore came off the bench, because that lineup had been winning some games late, and the Budenholzer wanted to keep that, and I sort of get that, I guess. But Cephalosha not playing at all, I mean, he's a guy. One reason I didn't want the Wizards to face the Milwaukee Bucks, the Bucks have all that length on the perimeter, and, you know, that's where the Wizards, you know, strength is. And if you get all these guys with, you know, arms in the way of Wall and Beal and Otto Porter, you know, maybe that could be potentially problematic, and yet he doesn't play at all. I know he'd been hurt, but do you think this was more injury, or is it just he's just lost his space with with Prince, with Hardaway and Dunleavy, you know, in his way?
Yeah, it's a very weird situation. Budenholzer is sort of tripled down now, over and over now, saying after the game that Cephalosha is 100% healthy. And Cephalosha was quoted in the AJC today talking about how he was 100% healthy. So you have to kind of trust that, even though the Hawks are not necessarily the most open book when it comes to injury stuff. And that's me being kind, as someone who's been around the team a lot. But if we assume he's healthy, I don't really understand it at all, to be honest. I think he's their best perimeter defender pretty comfortably. And in a series where you're dealing with two guys in Wall and Beal that need to be slowed down at some point, point. That blew me away that he wouldn't play at all. You mentioned the starting lineup stuff. It didn't bother me too much that starting lineup was what it was. I thought it was Bud probably getting a little bit too cute with some success down the stretch of the season. But that starting five actually did not play well at all together during the season. It's a very small sample, but they were like minus 15 points per 100 possessions not a very big sample at all, but not a ton of success there. And for me, Cephalosha not playing, though, was a much more big deal than it was for Bazemore coming off the bench or Prince starting, anything like that. It was just I couldn't get past the fact that in a game where, especially when transition defense was such a problem in the third quarter, even that they wouldn't have tried Cephalosha if he was healthy. So I don't want to say for 100% sure that the Hawks are being truthful on the injury stuff, but if he is healthy and just not playing, I really don't get it, and I think it's not a great idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, at some point during the game, I was like, wait, how come he's not playing? I was like, boy, did I miss the injury? I mean, I knew he'd been hurt.
No, that was responsive a lot. I mean, those of us that locally were sort of had an eye on it, but there was some national, I think it was Matt Moore of CBS Sports sent me a message during the game. Like, I didn't even notice that he had, it was like the fourth quarter, he didn't even notice it. I was like, yeah, I mean, it's a situation where I was blown away, but I could see why people, Cephalosha's not a guy who's going to be the flashiest player in the world. He's not going to make your offense go super well, so it wouldn't blow people away that he wouldn't be on the court necessarily. But defensively, the Hawks are just so much better with him on the court. Like, all their best lineups defensively this year include Cephalosha, and that's not a big surprise. And with the way that, Dennis Schroeder struggled on John Wall, and even guys like Bazemore, who I think does a pretty good job for the most part on smaller players, none of them are quite as good as Cephalosha. So we'll see if he plays in game two, but if he doesn't, I'm certainly going to ask a couple of questions about that before game three, if that's a situation where we don't see Cephalosha again.
Yeah. So, and just to sort of fast forward to game two, like I was going to ask, what's the one move that you think Atlanta needs to make? And I don't know if that's the one, but yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement that it seems like Cephalosha should play. Is there any other move that, if you were talking to Bud and you could say, hey, you know what? I kind of think this, is there like one move above all that you would sort of suggest?
Yeah, that would definitely be behind the list, play Tabo. But the other one for me would either be to go without a backup point guard altogether. I don't think Jose Calderon can play in the series. I kind of like Jose Calderon. He only played 8 minutes, and they were minus three, so it wasn't like they got run off the court. But either go without a backup point guard or go with Malcolm Delaney. That's a very small thing, and I think there's obviously some big picture stuff that you can look at. But for the most part, the guys who should play played, aside from Cephalosha. I don't think you can play Calderon, and really Mike Dunleavy as well. Obviously, his shooting is valuable, but I would look for something behind Dennis Schroeder that's not so good, and I would also look to be playing guys a little bit more and extending them a little bit more, because I don't think the Hawks can really hang with the Wizards if their entire plan is to just win with the benches around the court. That's going to be helpful if the Hawks bench outplays the Wizards bench, but that's only going to take you so far in a series when John Wall is going to play 37, 38, 39 minutes a game. Same with Bradley Beal, same with Markieff Morris, et cetera. Nothing huge there. Like, it's not a situation where they have to change everything they're doing. It's just that this team is just not quite as good as the Wizards, and they have to clean up everything on the edges in order to maintain sort of an even series. And right now, they're not really doing that, in my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, well, this is even a smaller point than that, but also staying with the point guard. We were noticing on our end that it was like one or two times that Calderon was able to drive and make a play, and then we were all like, oh, that's right, because Brandon Jennings is not very good on defense. And he really does struggle with teams. I mean, Brandon Jennings, their backup point guard situation behind John Wall was not good all year. And Jennings does give you a guy that can push the pace. He had 5 assists in 15 minutes. I mean, you'll take that. But, he's a pretty particular – he's bad on defense, and he's not a good outside shooter. And yet, Scott Brooks, because the Wizards don't also really have a backup two guard, he basically uses Jennings as the three guard. And a lot of times, John Wall will play the whole fourth quarter. And – When the Hawks started their comeback, in part, it was when they had John Wall and Brandon Jennings out there together. I mean, in a game where John, like, plus minus is always a tricky stat, but in a game where John Wall dominated, he was only plus 8. And the other Wizards starters were at least plus 18 or better. That's because he was out there with the bench, and he was paired with Jennings. And I think it was something like they were like a minus 9 in 4 minutes or something like that. So basically my advice to Scott Brooks would be, don't pair those two together anymore. Either stay with Beal for the entire first quarter and let Wall come in earlier in the second, or I would almost consider going with one of their other guards off the bench, either Trey Burke, who has been putting mothballs and hasn't played in weeks, significantly in weeks. He at least can shoot the three, nobody would cover him, so he could do that. If a rookie, Sheldon McClellan, again, he probably won't play the whole playoffs, but he gives you an energy and defense at least. Or they played Tomas Satoransky for 2 minutes. He gives you like a 6-7 option. He's more a point guard than a two. But I just know that Waylon Jennings is a bad look, a bad fit. And Brooks kept doing it all regular season after they picked up Jennings late in the year. But it just does not work. And it feels like in a 4-minute sample size is not that big of a deal. But in the playoffs, that can be a big deal. And that's where the game turned against the Wizards. Was starting in that stretch, so that would be for me. I would be like, "Hey, man, figure out what you can do, but don't go Wall and Jennings. Go come up with some other combination."
Yeah, I thought of one more that I probably should have said, and that would be to play Dwight Howard less. I don't think he should play not at all, but I think limiting his minutes in the series is a good idea. That's probably coming from my opinion that the Hawks are a pretty big underdog in the series, and they probably need to get a little bit more aggressive than they normally would. I think doing that and you know taking Howard off the court. I'm not saying play him for 3 minutes in the game. I'm saying play him somewhere maybe in the low 20s. Obviously he only played 29 minutes in this game, but I think their best chance is to try to, you know, be a little bit, play a little bit more small, a little bit more offensive minded, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm sure that's not going to be well received. But I wanted to get in there because I do believe that the Hawks should be playing Howard less. Well, Ben, thanks for doing this, man. You have anything else you wanted to ask before we get out of there? Or if not, we could probably just plug our stuff and get out of here.
Well, yeah, I mean, and just to your last point, especially if Jason Smith is not 100% or can't go, if you take Howard off the court for Ilyasova, then the Wizards have an issue. Normally you would say Markieff Morris is the guy who will then take Ilyasova, but they need him to guard Bazemore, and that means you would have either Kelly Oubre or Otto Porter guarding Ilyasova. And, you know, not saying that that's like, oh, my God, the Wizards are going to get crushed there. But they lose some, you know, they wouldn't have the size advantage. Ilyasova is pretty good. I mean, they don't want Gortat chasing Ilyasova out of the five, or sorry, out of the 3-point line. So anyway, that would be interesting, especially if Smith isn't all the way back. If Atlanta did do that, I think that could work out nicely for them. But Brad, definitely glad we got to do this. Thanks for getting it done, and I look forward to. To game two, should be fun.
Yeah, we should do this again at some point during the series, and hopefully it'll be a longer series than it might end up being here. But at least from my perspective, for content-wise and all those things, and I'm sure you enjoy basketball as well. But hopefully this will be a fruitful series for both teams, and we'll have to do it again, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Part of me wants the Wizards to get it done so we can move on if that's what's going to happen. But more basketball is not necessarily the worst thing. I'm not gonna lie. It doesn't hurt my bottom line. So
it's what we do, man. Thanks for doing this. We'll do it again, and stay tuned. You know, game two on Wednesday. So we'll check back in after that.
All right, Brad. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger.
Long drive. Long bounce shot. Dagger.